Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The 92nd South Dakota legislative session wraps up this week as lawmakers make their final decisions and then, of course, wait for word from the governor's office regarding vetoes. The Dakota Political Junkies join us every Wednesday at this time to explore the top political stories in the state. And this week, as always, we've got our choice of topics. With us for the conversation is John Hunter. He's publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Thanks, John, for being here today.
Hi, Lori. Thank you.
And Seth Tupper is with us as well. He's an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
John, let's start with the money and the budget, and got off the phone with Dan Ahlers, and he was talking about a Senate bill that sort of redefines what can be done with the half-penny sales tax increased from last session. It's now going into the general fund because times are tough, and the budget needs some flexibility, as it were. Do you have any insight into that, or what do you make of that last-minute change?
Well, I would suspect, Laura, you might know more than I do. It is a real challenge for appropriations this year. The estimates, I think, early on before the governor's budget address assumed it was going to be less than assumed earlier. In fact, the year that we're in was going to be short, and the year ahead was going to be short, and then during the course of the session, even more so. So I would guess there would be all sorts of scrambling. There normally is anyway in the last week or so with appropriations, and that's where all the stress and attention is going to go. I would suspect there's all sorts of things being tried to protect certain expenditures that people want to keep. Taxes are probably off the table. It could get very tense this week.
All right, John. So, in your experience, how this is fairly common for the last, the last hours on the clock to be a bit of a scramble.
Yes, there's no question about it. And then there'll also be some discussion about dipping into kind of rainy day funds, as some would call their technically their reserves. And South Dakota has a number of them. There's always a bit of an argument as to how much is enough and how much is too much. South Dakota requires a balanced budget, but it can be balanced with using funds that are available for that purpose. So there'll be a lot of discussion about that. In stronger times, we've been able to sock away some of this when we have one-time revenues and so forth. And I'm confident that they'll at least try to get some of that money to make the budget balanced this year.
All right, Seth Tupper, how bad does it have to be before you dig into the rainy day funds or tap into the reserves?
Well, for Governor Dugard, I would say probably pretty bad. I mean, that's been, I would say, his main focus as governor has been budgeting responsibly in a way that you don't have to tap into reserves or rainy day funds for anything but true emergencies. And so, as a backstop against that with his veto power, and I think it has to be pretty bad. And I would think that he would look to, avoid that. And it's always been his budget philosophy to, make the hard choices, swallow the pill now, make cuts, do some zero increases, whatever you've got to do to avoid, cutting into your reserves, which in the long run could come back to bite you if you have an actual emergency.
Right. Let's talk about some of the other last-minute news or new developments. Seth, you've got a piece in the Rapid City Journal. You can find that at rapidcityjournal.com if you don't already subscribe to the newspaper, which you should, because everyone should subscribe to a newspaper in my philosophy. I'll throw that out there. And Board of Regents, something about the makeup is a little bit wonky. Tell us about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on Monday, there were two appointments went to the Senate for confirmation, two of the governor's appointments to the Board of Regents. And the vote on those confirmations was deferred, and it turned out that people in the Democratic Party had found out that there were eight Republicans on the nine-member Board of Regents. The other one was an independent. And that conflicts with a state law that says there can be no more than six people of the same political party on that board. So a lot of scrambling had ensued since then, and it turned out that somewhat strangely, one of the board members, Catherine Johnson from out here in Hill City, was a Democrat when she was appointed to the board years ago. And then this past spring, just before the primary elections, she switched her party affiliation to Republican to be able to vote in the primary election, and then had never switched it back. So right away after the controversy flared up, she switched her registration back to Democrat. And in the minds of Republicans, that solved everything. In the minds of Democrats, it didn't, because the split on the board is still 7 Republicans, 1 Democrat, and 1 Independent, which is more than 6 Republicans.
7 is more than 6, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they can agree on that, but that might be one thing that the two sides can agree on. 7 is more than 6. Right. But the problem is that Republicans say there's one member of the Board of Regents is a student member, and Republicans have taken the position that the restrictions on the political party, the political affiliation of a member, do not apply to the student regent. And of course, the Democrats have said, yes, it does. And so the Republicans are in the majority, and they have the governor's office, and their interpretation is won out for now. But Democrats could try to challenge that, possibly in court if they wanted to, or something going forward. So it was a little kind of dust up, but it was also interesting to kind of a case study into the fact that despite being severely outnumbered in the legislature, Democrats can identify things and make a little hay and still, achieve some things.
Right. Board of Regents governs the state's public universities, in case you didn't know quite what they do. John Hunter, does it make a difference what the makeup is of that board, or are we just looking at the fact that it's state law and we pretty much ought to be following it?
Well, I agree with the latter. I think it's, if the law is in place, it should be followed. If it's wrong, then it can be modified or withdrawn. There are legitimate, I think, on issues on both sides of whether that student region is applies to that law or not. So I think this one's unsettled. But I think maybe the bigger point is should state boards, and there are plenty of them that have this sort of restriction. I served on one a number of years ago too, and so people are normally very cognizant of that. I'm a little surprised that it kind of caught people off guard slightly when this happened, because I think most boards are like that. But there is a question: is that does it really matter on a particular board that they are members of a particular political party?
Right.
And certainly, people who are into party politics said absolutely that's very important, and that Republicans are going to take that board, essentially a administrative board, in one direction or another, depending on their party politics. Others believe they're just going to try to do the best job they can, try to get the best members you can, regardless of looking at the initial after their name.
And John, how about the question of nonpartisan elections as well? You have someone from Hill City who switched her party affiliation just so she could vote in a primary. What do you make of that big picture question?
Well, I think many South Dakotans have, let's call them, loose affiliations with their registered party. Yes, when we go to the courthouse and you register to vote for the first time, you check one of the boxes, but we tend not to be kind of active members. And I say we, many South Dakotans. It makes sense to be in one party or the other, but they don't live and die necessarily by that. And South Dakota law makes it relatively easy to change now and then, and that's not a bad thing. I don't think that we shouldn't be bound to that and move around a little bit. So I'm not concerned about people switching registrations now and then. If it's to try to cheat on something, and that's not a good idea. But I think in this case it was an innocent circumstance where she wanted to vote in a primary because nothing was going on in the Democratic primary and switch back. But it's an interesting thing. But I'd say most party members in South Dakota are not avid party members.
Hmm. Seth Tupper, we've got a list of things that we could talk about here in the final days of this session. What, pick one out of the pile. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, I guess I'd say, just a bigger picture. It was interesting as we look at some of the bills that are coming out right now, how many of them are these big, broad Bill of Rights type issues with the two bills, the one to allow guns to be carried by certain people in the Capitol, another bill to repeal the requirement that you need a permit to carry a concealed weapon. Another bill to restrict the right of people to engage in protest actions. And so it's interesting to me how much of the session that is being focused this year on those kinds of basic rights, the right to free speech and the right to peaceably assemble and the right to bear arms. We seem to be struggling with those, how to govern those rights and how to restrict them just as much as we ever have in decades past. So I find that interesting. And then we touched on it a little earlier, with all the talk over those bills, those kind of highly controversial, attention-grabbing bills, the sort of lost story is the financial situation of the state and the fact that we now know that there probably is not going to be any increase in education, K through 12 education spending, in the budget that's going to be approved. And that's kind of been lost a little bit and is probably far more honestly impactful than some of the bills that have gotten a lot of attention.
Right. Sign of the times, John Hunter, that we're all sort of drawn to some of these bigger, you know, Bill of Rights issues, as Seth calls them, or even social issues, and maybe take our eye off the financial ball that's pretty important right now?
I think you're exactly right, Lori. That is, I think, a sign of the times, and where a lot of, because of the divisiveness of a lot of politics in the United States, is that people are looking at sometimes at very radical kinds of either issues or, you know, changing fundamental beliefs that we have. Those two that Seth articulated, I think the right to bear arms and the right to peaceably assemble, are really rock-solid fundamental parts of our nation's history and our Constitution, and I sometimes worry about those being messed with too much. If I may just talk briefly about that kind of peaceably assembly, that's...
Please, yeah.
yeah, they're trying to pass laws to prevent the possibility of violent protests, similar to what happened in North Dakota with the Dakota Access, in case that would come here with the Keystone XL pipeline. And I have great concerns that you try to restrict peaceable assembly. That's, you know, that should not be messed with. Now, if it gets violent, or, I mean, you can put some other things on that say, hey, this can be broken up or whatever, or you can't unlawfully trespass when you're protesting. There's a lot of good other things to do with that. But to say you can't gather or no more than 20 can gather, those are, you know, that's just a U.S. constitutional right that I think is a great part of America that should be preserved.
So they're looking, John, at the financial impact, too, lessons learned from North Dakota. Are there ways to sort of address that and still preserve that constitutional right to assemble?
That's an excellent question. I don't know the answer. But the cost in North Dakota, and there's some cost borne by South Dakota, too, because we sent up some law enforcement officers to help and have not been reimbursed for that. Now it turns out North Dakota is going to gain a bunch of money from the pipeline that kind of, you know, is a lot more than what they were having to pay out in law enforcement. But that's a very good question. It could be significant. It could be, in some cases, kind of a budget alterer that, you know, we have to do something different because of that. It's a real issue. And without restricting people in advance from protesting, you would like somehow to be able to control those costs.
Right. Seth Tupper, what do you make of this trying to figure out what to do if large-scale protests come to the state for a pipeline or other reason?
Well, it's a really thorny issue, and you can see both sides of it. On the one hand, I find it interesting that, you know, there seems to be an assumption among some people that, you know, on public land, that if it's land owned by the state, it's just kind of sitting there as a blank slate waiting for somebody to come and do something on it, when in reality, these are lands that are held by the Office of School and Public Lands that have cattle on them, that have people leasing these lands. And the people that lease the lands have certain rights not to have that land, you know, trampled over or occupied for months at a time by protesters. So you've got to weigh that out. On the other hand, you can't deny that there's a racial aspect to this that is very uncomfortable. We all know that the protests in North Dakota were motivated primarily by Native Americans who were upset about a pipeline passing near their reservation and potential spills contaminating their water supply. So it's hard for Native Americans to look at this and not feel as though they're being targeted and being told that they don't have the same right to protest and raise issues that the rest of us do. So that's going to be an ongoing struggle, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up in the courts. If we do get a large protest situation with Keystone XL, we'll probably see all of this litigated in the same way that everything is being litigated with Dakota Access.
John Hunter, let's go ahead and close out with the Second Amendment, the concealed carry issues and those conversations that are happening in Pierre now. What's sort of driving the call to have handguns allowed inside the state capitol for lawmakers to carry? Is there a security issue there? What's bringing it up now?
Well, I think there's a concern all over the country about security of public bodies, legislative bodies like this, and South Dakota, which has kind of has a unique relationship with guns, with our hunting and so forth. We tend not to be, kind of Chicago guns so much, but there's people have grown up with guns and have them in their homes and all that, and so the state capitol is a gun-free zone as defined by state statute, and said you can't bring them in there except, I think, as if you're a law enforcement official, highway patrolman, or and so on. But there are certainly, I would guess, there's probably guns out in legislators' cars, right? out in the parking lot waiting. But it gets down to one fundamental thing, too, I think, is that is, what better protects public safety, and that is, outlawing guns or having everyone have guns, and kind of pointing at each other. There's a good argument to be made on each side. I don't know. I do know that there are other parts of our society besides legislators that face the same thing. Celebrities and so forth and athletes, they say, well, the reason I'm carrying this gun is for self-protection. Well, you never hear about kind of successful self-protection. It usually ends up that they shoot someone else or shoot themselves or some of these. So it's an inexact argument on doing that, but it's we can argue this one for the next century and right. Not come up with a solution.
Meanwhile, Seth Tupper, we got to watch where the money's going, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not take our eye off it. Seth Tupper is an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Find his work at rapidcityjournal.com. Seth, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And John Hunter, publisher of Madison Daily Leader. What's the website for that, John?
I'm glad I get music during
right?
my name.
Right, it's a celebration. Ba-boom, John Hunter.
I feel much better. MadisonDailyLeader.com.
Excellent. Thanks, John, for being
Thanks,
here as
Lori.
Well.